Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. Every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., we stream live at richarddugan.com. We archive at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also link to our guests. We'll be giving you the link to today's guest in just a moment. And we're certainly glad that you have joined us. And also a belated happy anniversary to my parents, who last month, actually June 3rd of this year, celebrated their 60th wedding anniversary. And it was great to be able to go back to Phoenix. As much as I dislike going back to Phoenix because of the heat, that's the only reason. It was nice to see the family and some friends and just really have a very enjoyable time get to celebrate with the family and have four generations together, which was very cool. The last time was, that I can recall, was 1994 with my great-grandmother and my mother, my sister, and her then-baby daughter, who is now the mother of my parents' great-granddaughter or my grandniece. You have to pull out a family tree to figure that all out. That's all I can tell you. And I've never been very good at family trees. I just go by what I've been told. Today's program, we're going to be touching light. How to free your fiber optic fascia. And we're going to be talking with the author of this book. That's an interesting title. We're going to define it for you. We're going to give you all of the information necessary to understand what it is we're going to be talking about with Ronell Wood. And Ronell from Ojai, California, just a stone's throw. Actually, it's a catapult, I think, from Santa Barbara. But nonetheless, thank you for joining us on the program.
I am happy to be sitting in the sunshine talking to you.
Well, we're here sitting as we speak with, foggy skies. Marine layers rolled in. I love that. I would have that year-round, quite honestly, and then have the because as I said, coming from Phoenix, I've had all of the heat that I need. I've had 46, almost a half a century of it, and thank you. I'd like to now have clouds and rain and drizzle and all those fun things. But anyway, it's great to have you with us to talk about this. Again, Touching the Light is the title of the book, and I heard, and I can't remember how many decades ago it was. I mean, in biology, of course, we go through the entire physical body structure, the respiratory and the skeletal and the nervous system and all of the other systems of the body. One that I hadn't really heard of until my first wife went through a massage therapy and I learned about the lymphatic system. And of course, then when my second wife went through cancer back in 2001, cancer therapy and so forth, I learned about the lymph nodes and all those different parts of the body. But there's one that I hadn't really thought too much about it because I didn't think, you know, there was really a separation. I knew about the various layers of the skin, but I wasn't aware that there was even a layer that wasn't part of the skin, per se, that keeps the skin from slipping all over the place. And it's, if I'm correct, and it's called the fascia. Is that correct?
Yes. The way I pronounced it is fascia, like
fascia.
Fashion.
Okay, fascia.
But
we'll go with that.
In the science world, many people pronounce it the way you do.
Yes, you say potato, and I say just mash it up for me with garlic. Okay, let's talk about the fascia. Let's talk about the fascia.
All right.
And
it's all
why,
I ever talk about.
Why? Okay, well, let's start out with why is it so important, other than maybe what I mentioned, and maybe that's not so important, as to why it's so important that you needed not only to write a book about it, but to make this, so to speak, your life's work.
I wrote a book about it because I say all the things that are in the book at least 100 times a week. And one of my clients was a very well-known writer, and when he came in for treatment for a knee replacement, he just kept telling me, Ronell, you need to write this down. This is important information. The whole world needs to know this. So it is my effort to get the word out there as far and wide as I can. And why it's important is because fascia is your connective tissue, and it is the one system in your body that connects and touches and surrounds every other system in your body. With that understanding, I think that we could shift our paradigm of how we treat people medically and holistically. If we understood that this mechanism could be the first thing that is addressed long before we resort to giving people prescription pain medications and cutting things out of them, we might be able to first do no harm in a really spectacular way by alleviating the pressure that can be created by this connective tissue.
Now, I know, too, that there are surgical procedures that go on that require, obviously, the removal of certain things like cancer and maybe your appendix that bursts or gallbladder, those kinds of things, kind of routine things or other issues that you have to go in and you've got to do this kind of thing. And so they're cutting straight through, down through the fascia, correct?
That's exactly right. And our previous understanding of the fascia is that it was just packing material, something in the way, like bubble wrap or packing peanuts, that they needed to hack through in order to get to the target they were after, without any regard or realization for the function of fascia in the body and the effect of cutting on the fascia. Because you've heard the expression adhesions, and you know about scars, and it is the connective tissue that you're talking about, that when it repairs, it repairs crisscross and diagonal and back and forth like a darn in a sock, rather than the fibers laying down in the same direction as the muscle. It reinforces the area that was injured to make sure that it's stronger than it was before. But what can be happening, even though you see a nice light white scar on the surface of the skin, underneath that layer, the fibers of fascia are wanting to stabilize, and they're wanting to reach out and grab and latch onto anything around it in order to make sure that it's really strong and doesn't slip around. And so a C-section a woman has had 30 years ago can eventually be causing digestive trouble, problems with their reproductive system, and elimination now. But their doctor wouldn't know that and would tell them, oh, that couldn't possibly be related. You had that done 30 years ago.
Well, I can certainly tell you that the process of these adhesions and the danger therein, because I know, too, that when people have these kinds of procedures, it can then create all kinds of other problems. Matter of fact, my wife, as I mentioned, having had a cancer surgery back in 2001, it was in the abdominal area. And in 2015, and I take that back, 2014, I believe it was. Yeah. She had a complete 100% blockage, intestinal blockage,
yes,
or obstruction, to where I thought it was the stomach flu. I didn't know, for some reason, I did not remember this from biology, that bile is green. And as she was expelling the bile that comes from the liver, it was because the intestine was blocked, and so nothing was getting through.
You can die from that.
And I think that she almost did. As a matter of fact, I thought it was the stomach flu, and I went to work one evening, and I came home. I rushed her to the ER at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we caught it in literally the nick of time. And then there's the issue where they will then go in to remove the adhesions. And now you still have the potential problem down the road of new adhesions from the new surgery.
Yes.
Has there, now I know this is maybe a little, I don't know if this is far afield a little bit from the conversation that we really want to talk about, but is there a way today, knowing what we know today, knowing what you know today, that we can still, if we have to cut into the human body, that we can then sew it up, close the wound so that there are no adhesions? Or is that just it's kind of a given because of the invasive procedure that was conducted?
I wouldn't say that's far afield. I'd say that's smack in the middle
okay.
of the field. Because now that we are creating a bridge between those of us who do body treatments and the scientific world, they're listening to us without rolling their eyes because we have been able to look at living fascia magnified 25 times under the skin, and we can both look at that and say we're talking about the same thing. A body worker might have previously said vibration, energy, inflammation, palpation, like I can feel something under the skin, and that would cause the people in the scientific world to roll their eyes, and they would say, prove it, show it to me. And now we have looked under the skin and we can see it. So the medical world is beginning to catch up with what we have known for quite some time about the importance of the connective tissue and how it not only affects someone physically. So now that the medical field is starting to catch up with what we've known for some time, that the fascia not only affects us physically but emotionally, they are developing different techniques of cutting into the body. We used to study the connective tissue on cadavers, and what they saw on a cadaver is a very different consistency than what we see in a living person, and it was easy for them to disregard it. Now when they are doing a study on a cadaver, instead of using their scalpel vertically, they're going in horizontally. So they're not cutting straight down into something. They'll shave down a layer and then lift it up a little bit and work underneath the fascia. For now, until they perfect that technique, myself and my colleagues, John Barnes being my mentor, are addressing fascial adhesions and scars with myofascial release treatment, where the body remains intact. There is no cutting open of anything. And the treatments are gentle. Different from Rolfing, needs to be distinguished from Rolfing that understands fascia but forces the body and really pushes a client beyond where they're able to let go and relax. We find that if we hang out with an adhesion, we press until we feel resistance, and we maintain that pressure without pushing beyond that border, the body will eventually drop its defenses. It will begin to soften, and it will let go, and the consistency of the fascia is made of elastin and collagen. So the collagen is like wax, and it can melt. And the elastin is like a rubber band, and it can glide open. And the body can interrupt adhesions and repetitive holding patterns and emotional holding patterns that they've held on to for years.
That's interesting, because I had, I think it would be considered a fairly non-invasive procedure back in 2012, where I had my right knee scoped, where they went in to remove some torn meniscus on both sides. And boy, I tell you what, it's been great ever since. I've had virtually no problems with that issue. But they still had to have these tiny little incisions on the sides of the knee. And now I'd sit there thinking, after the limited conversation that you and I have shared here so far, that I've got nothing to worry about. Everything's going to, you know, I don't have to worry about that issue of adhesions because it's the knee. It's no big deal. Is that true?
I would love to underline anything positive that you feel about your knee.
Okay.
And if you're not having trouble, why cause any? Different people's scar tissue reacts differently. And the direction of the scar can make a big difference, too. If the scar is a vertical one on the side of your knee, is that what it looks like?
I think it's horizontal. If I was standing, I think. I haven't. It's pretty well healed over, so it's kind of hard to tell. But I think it was. I was asleep at the time, and I'm not sure. But it sounds like it. It sounds an awful lot like the skin has a grain.
It does, exactly. Yeah. And I've never heard anybody say that before. That's great.
Well, the way you're describing cutting one way versus the other seems to make a difference. And it's like when we're cutting into our meat on our plate, you know, you don't cut with the grain because then it all shreds on you. You cut against the grain so that, you know, you get those nice slices.
I love that visual. Beautifully said. Different people's bodies react differently in the way that they heal. As we know that folks with black skin oftentimes suffer from keloid scars, where it really humps up and builds up on the surface of the skin. And other people don't have much of a reaction. But imagine a crossways vertical scar like an abdominal scar,
mm-hmm.
and how much area that covers and how many layers it goes through in that direction, and you realize that the fascia may panic and say, oh, dear God, we weren't ready for that. We will make sure we are ready for anything from now on, and we're just going to keep building scar and building scar and building scar to stabilize this area. So as soon after surgery as you can, I'm hoping that physicians will write a prescription for myofascial release. It does have its own diagnosis code, and insurance will cover it partially.
Really?
Yes.
I have to say that, and I know I'm not alone in this frustration, that there are so many things that I have tried, and my present wife and I have tried, that work, we have experienced 100% complete relief, or at least maybe 90 to 95% relief. And yet the insurance companies, they would rather put us on drugs or give us therapies that are less than favorable, if you will. And I know how much, because I was working for a station back in Phoenix in the 80s, I know how much struggle the field of chiropractic went through before it became accepted. And so now it seems like acupressure and acupuncture and more of the alternative preventative, let alone curative, if you will, methods. I know it takes time, but my opinion has always been, especially when it came to, say, Chinese medicine in particular, been around for over 5,000 years. There was no FDA. They just knew that it worked. And I wish that we could get to that point. Now, you say that this whole process of the myofascia work, if you will, is being slowly accepted by.
I think we are at that point.
Which is great, which is fantastic, because it opens up. I mean, I've known some people that I've worked with over the years. Who were taking like nine, and I know this is minor by comparison to others, who were taking 9 different medications, and each one was for a side effect of the previous. And I remember talking with this one gal who finally went to her doctor and said, I want off of all this stuff. I'm tired of taking all of these pills for what? She got off all of them.
Mm-hmm.
She was fine.
Oh.
Absolutely fine. Now, it wasn't that easy, but nonetheless, you went through that process. You know, I have to say that I'm rather relatively fortunate that I'm only taking one to help to maintain my blood pressure level. Although I still argue to this day. How do you know that that's not my normal blood pressure level?
Yeah. Let's talk about blood pressure.
Please, before mine goes up.
I love the words that you use because you talk about your wife and you finding things that work.
Mm-hmm.
I almost named my business What Works, because everything I do has been in pursuit of injuring myself and going in search of what works and finding many things that don't. And
what makes it sound like you were doing a scientific experiment. You would go injure yourself and then go find...
First-hand research. And that's where we are right now. The medical world and the somewhat less medical world, but very still involved with the body, those of us who work with bodies, really want to find what works. And I was married to a physician, and my sister is CFO of a large hospital in Sacramento, and we've had long discussions about how wonderful it would be to have patients need them less and be less dependent on them. And they really appreciate that I am in pursuit of things that will take care of the problem much more easily with better outcomes, fewer instances of addiction and complication. And I think that is what's going to appeal to those who actually treat clients in Western medicine. I'm not going to go too deep into the lobbying power of Big Pharma that would not be happy at all with people being less dependent on drugs. But I think the people are leading the way. And where blood pressure is concerned, if you can imagine that when you were born, you had a certain volume of blood and enough space in all of your blood vessels to contain it. And as you began to grow up and you began to learn how to hold more tightly in your throat so that you don't talk too loud or tell family secrets or say rude things, and you learned how not to reach out and slap people and steal other kids' toys, and you learned how not to kick people, and you held in your legs and your arms, and you learned to contain yourself and be socially appropriate, that is the job of your connective tissue, to inhibit those movements. Then begin to add to that moments of fright, ranging anywhere from hearing a loud noise, and your entire fascial system squeezes in response to that, to slow down your blood, restrict your blood vessels so that if you are in fight or flight mode and you have to fight and get cut, you don't bleed too much and it squeezes your nerves so you don't feel right away. So there's perceived danger that causes you to squeeze. There's real danger. You may have been in a horrible car accident. You may have gone to war. And over time, your fascial system has been wanting to protect you by squeezing. And oftentimes, after those moments of fear, you walk away without your body interrupting the pattern. You're frozen in fright, and the sympathetic nervous system is firing, saying it's not safe to let go, be prepared, you always want to know when the next blow is going to come, don't ever let your guard down. And the parasympathetic system doesn't kick in for rest and restore to interrupt those patterns. And you eventually have a body that has the same volume of blood that it always had, but it's having to circulate through a system that is being statically squeezed. The vessels love intermittent squeezing, and they respond to that intermittent squeezing by dilating, but they're not getting a chance to open and push out into the body because there's areas in your body that are being pressurized and squeezed by your internal straitjacket, the fascial tissues. So doing myofascial release addresses what's going on in the body unconsciously because these are patterns we cannot always be consciously thinking about. And if you're not aware you're doing it, there's nothing you can do to interrupt it. And it takes someone else coming along and pulling on your arm for a minute to 5 minutes for you to realize, oh, I did not realize that I was squeezing my shoulder up toward my ear constantly. And you can let go of those patterns and interrupt that holding, and it lowers people's blood pressure.
Hmm. I'll need to talk to you further about that.
I don't catapult away.
Well, I'm hoping. But, the thing is that I still remember. I may not recall the year, but I do still remember that. I remember when I started experiencing some struggles mentally, mental challenges, if you will, with the world around me. And that is when I felt that my high blood pressure began to rise. My blood pressure began to rise. Mm-hmm. And they ran all the tests. They sucked enough blood out of me to make another one of me and tested all of the other secretions, found nothing that would explain it. And I said, I told you before you stuck me with that needle, you weren't going to find anything because it's not there. It's in my head. I need to find a way to better release those, I'll call them blockages, to a healthier, more sustainable, state of mind. And then my blood pressure will probably level out. And I've been trying to do that. And one of the suggestions, of course, was meditation,
mm-hmm.
Which I still struggle with to this day. I mean, I've been interviewing people, my God, for 37, 38 years, mm-hmm. on all of these different subjects and conversing about these kinds of things. And I know from my guests how valuable, how important, how effective meditation can be. But I have never sat down and, just spent the time. And that's one of the reasons I moved to not specifically to Santa Barbara, but to the ocean. Was because I needed to be near the ocean. But that's where the high blood pressure went up. And I'm going, wait a minute, that's not what's supposed to happen. So you're saying that working with the fascia through myofascia release, there are ways in which we can, and I'll use the term naturally, to affect our physiology, our biology, our physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual states, if you will.
Precisely. And I think your listeners will be really tuning in here, having heard you say, it's in my head. And many people have been told that by their doctor. And what are you supposed to do with that? I have the same experience you do with meditation. Luckily, I walk. And that is my moving meditation, and it flattens out my brain waves. But my body needs the opportunity to tell the truth about what it went through. And if we have been in situations where we had to hold our tongue, where we felt frustrated, where if we were an animal, we would have punched somebody or scratched their eyes out or throttled them, we don't do that, and I don't suggest doing that. But the physical body has been holding that back, and it needs an opportunity to find a pressure release valve and tell the truth about how it felt in that moment. And you can imagine some of the physical things people have been through, they're still containing to make sure that they don't frighten anybody and they are able to maintain their social status by acting appropriate.
Yeah.
But when you're in a treatment, you sometimes get an urge to move in a way that your mind logically can't explain. But when I see the movement, I facilitate that. It's called unwinding. And I have seen a woman who was a former Olympic diver stretch to the point where her upper torso was hanging off of the table, face up. I had her by the feet, and her arms were stretched over her head as she allowed that internal writhing to happen. And you could see her return to these positions she'd been in when she hit the water just a little bit funny and tweaked her neck or her shoulder.
Mm.
And her body was wanting to let go and taking her back to that exact position for it to release the fear that kind of took a picture inside her at the time of that dangerous position and in a safe environment is allowed to let go. And the brain, it gets rewarded for having the right answer and knowing why and figuring out reasons. But you can't find the solution on that channel because the fascia is not linear and rational and logical. So if you can get your brain to step back from being the monitor and the sensor and allow your body to begin to tell the truth and move in the way it instinctively feels it wants to,
mm-hmm.
you can unwind in 15 minutes a trauma that you may have been carrying around for 12 years.
Now, you say that this, the MFR, this is something that is covered by some insurance companies, some health plans?
Yes. I've been doing this since, I became a massage therapist in 93, and I found John Barnes in 2003. And over the years, people have tried various ways of getting it paid for. And I have gotten to the point where I just don't deal with insurance companies anymore because they try so hard not to pay anything.
Right.
And they put many requirements and restrictions on me. But I have in the past known Blue Cross to reimburse 50%. And that's been my firsthand experience of clients who've been able to get reimbursement. There may be other avenues. And there are geniuses out there who love dealing with insurance companies, and I'm not one of them.
Nor am I. We have struggled with our insurance company just to try to get coverage for acupuncture.
Yeah.
And my wife went through a series of treatments with the acupuncturist for, 4 months? For 4 months. It wasn't every single week necessarily, but nonetheless, over, I think, $800 to $1,000 that we had to pay out of pocket because they refused. And yet the woman was on the list in the network, and yet they said no because either, A, we had the wrong, whatever the reasons. And I got to a point where I decided it's just not worth fighting it. I'm going to need acupuncture for the stress I'm putting myself under to try to get them to pay. Let's just let it go. Just let it go. And maybe we can find an acupuncturist or in your case, an MFR practitioner who maybe takes chickens or goats or things like this, or I get you a bushel of wheat, you know, we'll try something. The old fashioned way of doing this kind of stuff is quite honestly, a lot of the stuff that, for example, what you're talking about, it's nothing. It's not something new. They didn't know exactly what it was that they were doing. They just knew, I need to do this. I need to manipulate this. I need to bring this over this way and this over that way and this position and that position. And it just, it was intuitive.
Exactly.
It's like everything new is old and everything old is new. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. We're just giving it different names. And in this case, we're talking with Ronell Wood, and she is the author of Touching Light, How to Free Your Fiber Optic Fascia. We're going to find out what in the world is the reference to fiber optics when we get back here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I just had an MFR facelift, and I feel wonderful. No, not actually. Although that's probably would do a whole lot better to do something like that for toning the skin and what have you, the tissue, than going in with a knife and cutting away, because in a few years, that's going to break down too. My guest is Ronell Wood, and she is the author of Touching Light, How to Free Your Fiber Optic Fascia. Fiber optics, why that analogy?
You are talking about acupuncture. You've heard the term meridians, and now we know that the meridians are the fascial fibers. How do we know that? Because this genius doctor, Jean-Claude Gambartau,
ooh, nice.
Yes, a Frenchman, is a specialist in hand surgery, and he had these fiber optic surgical tools by which he could view the inside of a person's wrist when he was working on repairing a tendon, and he asked the patient, may I record what I'm seeing when I'm in there? And he put out a video called Strolling Under the Skin. And it is simply the view of your connective tissue magnified 25 times. And wow. When we look at that, we're unable to deny the fact that these strands of connective tissue are translucent. You can see right through them. They contain ground substance, which is the salt water in your body, and they flow in the same direction as muscle, and they conduct light. They're hollow, fluid-filled, and they conduct light. This is a really profound thing to visualize. I was so moved by it that I wanted every patient that I saw to see this before I treated them, but the movie was so long and very boring because it was filled with a lot of science-y language. I just took little clips out of it and pieced it together, and I made a 1 minute, 20-second video for educational purposes for my clients. I put it on YouTube, and 100,000 hits later, this is why I say we're at this time of change. Teachers and educators of all kinds, doctors, myofascial therapists, have grabbed this little video, and they're using it to show people this is what your fascia looks like, and it's in my book. I've used little black squares called QR codes, quick response codes, that a smartphone can read, and it'll take you immediately to the video that's a minute and 20 seconds that will change your perception of how you are put together, because you'll be able to see what you look like in there, and you'll know that the fascial fibers conduct light. Neurologists are studying its role in consciousness. Could this be the mechanism of our consciousness?
Interesting. Very interesting. And I saw those, quite honestly, throughout the book. These things. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of a neat design. And I thought, that looks kind of familiar. You know, and I'm going, okay. And then, of course, you have some other symbols in here, which are kind of cool, little spirals. They almost look like an Irish or a Celtic design.
All things fibrous and light-filled, I get excited about.
It's very neat. But I like I said, I was looking at QR, is it symbol? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it stands for quick response code. You can see them everywhere. If you've ever boarded a plane with one of those passes, it's just a thing that you can use that'll take you. For instance, in the book, it'll take you to my YouTube video immediately, and you can see it on your smartphone.
Well, I think it's great the technology that we have available to allow us to do that, and we're able to find out so many different things. I remember back when I first started on the internet, I think it was like 94, something like that. Boy, they told you don't believe anything that you see on the internet. And, of course, people are still saying that to this day to some degree, and maybe rightly so. this whole process that we are going through of learning about these modalities, learning about this process of writing, if you will, or maybe better the phrase, writing as opposed to being unbalanced, our bodies, getting our bodies on an even keel, as it were. Everybody is really working hard to do that. I mean, I'm headed, you know, I'm in the infancy stages of the second half of my life. And I was listening to an audio of a birthday celebration for my great-grandmother when she was 95. She lived to be 100. But when she was in her early 90s, I used to say that I was going to outlive her, but she was making it really hard. So I've still got another 44 years to go, at minimum. And I want to make sure that, as a matter of fact, I was talking with my mother. She is raising my grandniece. The parents bring her over to stay with my folks during the day and so forth. And of course, we're talking about, you know, we talked about getting together for their anniversary and everything. And she began to describe my grandniece as having the same level of high energy at the age of 3 that I did. It was like, wow, you're comparing me to her? Really? Okay. I want to have that kind of energy when I'm 93, if I possibly can. I do not want to be one of those old guys walking around hunched over with a cane. I've already used a cane enough before I had my knee surgery. I'd had enough of that, and I don't want to repeat that. And I know that most everybody feels somewhat the same way, that, you know, as we get older, we don't want to lose our mobility. We don't want to lose our flexibility, our agility, if you will. All right, so I won't be able to run track and field. I won't be able to climb trees without a ladder, and so on and so forth. But I still want to be able to take, like with you, you say that your meditation is your walking. Here in Santa Barbara, I can walk to the beach in 20 minutes, mm-hmm. about as long as it takes for the trolley that they have to travel that same distance mm-hmm. with all of its stops, which I think, hey, that's pretty cool. But I know that we're all kind of there. That's really where we are in our society, but even globally for that matter.
Yes. May I say, preach, brother.
Yes.
Do you feel it?
I feel it coming through the radio.
Decrepitude is not inevitable.
Yeah.
And a doctor may tell you, well, you're at a certain age, you just can't expect to be able to do that anymore. And I say what?
Yeah.
Because I'm from the baby boomer generation. I'm 1963, so right at the tail end.
Mm-hmm.
And we have always driven the market, and we've never settled for the status quo. So we're standing here saying, I think that we're going to be living to 100 and beyond. I care about the quality of that life. And I don't accept that I just need to look forward to buying a scooter.
Yeah.
Get around.
Here.
And we need to really lead the way for the next generation to understand there are things you can do right now to develop a habit. Now I'm beginning to sound like everybody before me in the fitness and health world, but it's really true that you must continue to move, and the way that you move is important. Many times when we get into our 50s and we say, wow, I need to get back in shape, we think, well, I'll do what I did when I was in high school, and I'll run track, or, you know, something super vigorous. And we don't realize that movement back then set us up for how we're feeling now, because we've been walking with our feet turned outward. Most people, if you stand up right now and look down at your feet, you should ask yourself this question: would you drive your car if your tires were mounted like that? They're usually pointing to the left and right of you instead of the direction that you want to walk. That simple understanding was brought to me by Katie Bowman, who has written a book called Move Your DNA. And I studied with her for 2 years because I wanted to show people when they got off the table from getting myofascial relief, how to not end up back on my table with the same kinds of problems over and over again. So there's more to it than just getting your fascia stretched. There is correcting your body mechanics, because when your feet are pointing a certain direction, your knees follow that direction. And if they're pointing left and right with your feet, every step you take twists that knee joint, because you're trying to head forward and you end up rolling through your leg sideways. And that's an area that I address with people too. and many who come to see me stop the progression of things that were going to get them a knee replacement or a hip replacement. And if they got that hip or knee replacement, no one in the PT world ever looked at how they walked before or after.
Mm.
And that's what I address as well, is how to correct the body mechanics of what you're doing so you don't get another knee replacement, because 70% of joint replacements have to be replaced again.
You know, that's very interesting that you bring that up, because it was one of the conversations that I had with my orthopedist in regards to doing the scope that they did on my knee in 2012, which, God, I can't believe it's 4 years. I said, is this a prelude to somewhere down the road needing a knee replacement? He said, oh, no, absolutely not. No. And I even was reading some things, too, before I had the surgery about how where it is possible, not totally impossible, that the meniscus, the tears, they could heal. But it's not likely, because you're still putting pressure on them. I mean, it's like if you could put the spare meniscus in there and take out the other one and let it heal. Yeah, okay. But it's not likely that that's going to happen, because it's in constant use. But at least it was good news that I wasn't looking at, you know, a knee replacement at the age of 70 or 80 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I've seen people, I know people who come through the radio station who have had them. Some of them were very successful. Others, not so much. Mm-hmm. And these individuals are crankier than ever before. But understandably
so. Trying to to solve a problem of scar tissue by cutting some more.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how that would work. And again, it goes back to a lot of the old adages. One I was talking with someone about today, about the height of insanity, the definition thereof is to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And
yeah.
It's like we haven't reached the 24th century where they do non-invasive repairs of bones and tissue. We haven't gotten there yet. We're getting there.
I think this is the first step.
But I think you're right.
We're going to look back and say, wow, we used to be so barbaric.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't have to go back too far. And we were using, and actually, I believe they still are, in certain instances, using leeches for a lot of what ailed you.
And what is that for? It's to bring circulation into an area where it hasn't been. And I say, there might be a gentler way of doing that if we can open the fascial fibers and allow the blood to get between the layers that it's squeezing.
So if somebody were to come to you and say, I have this condition, I've been diagnosed with, and they maybe just hand you their summary of their medical condition from their physician, their what have you, and you were to look it over, whether it be high blood pressure, you know, like in my instance, or, sore knees, or, and I'm just going to throw some stuff out because I don't know how much a myofascia release will help in these conditions, but it sounds to me like it probably would. But let's say they've had, gout, and they've had a sore shoulder and neck for months and months and months and have gotten no relief, and on and on. And they're really tired of taking the medications. They make them fuzzy. They do all of the side effects. I still love those commercials where they tell you what the medication's for. Then they list the side effects. And
I was homicidal feelings.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was I remember one heart medication. I forget what the heart condition was, but one of the side effects was the heart condition that the medication was being prescribed for. And I thought, are you really serious?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so they've come to you, they've given you their medical history. How much of this list, so to speak, and we don't have to go into specifics per se, but let's just say for the sake of argument, some of the things I've mentioned, how much of that can you really help and facilitate in healing?
Well, let's pretend I'm seeing someone for the first time. I find out while they're filling out the paperwork, by looking at them, how much pain they're in. And oftentimes they can't hear me talk and as long as they're in pain. So the first thing I'm probably going to do is want to get them onto the table before I explain anything. But I do want to get an idea from them of what diagnoses they've been given. Parentheses, diagnoses don't impress me. In fact, in some cases, I think that they can cause more problems than they solve by telling a person what's going on with them. I'll explain that more in a minute. I want to know about accidents and surgeries that they've had. Those are the most important things to me, so I kind of get a map in my own mind of where in their body they may be stuck and holding. Once we've done a session and they've been able to get some alleviation from their pain, their instinct tells them that this treatment is on track to getting them relief from the symptoms that they came in with. Where they haven't been able to get relief from all the other modalities they've spent their money on or ran their insurance out trying to solve. And if they have a perspective about their body as though there is pressure inside, and we can start finding the pressure release valve, there are so many diagnoses that can be resolved if you can alleviate the pressure and you have a perspective that it may have started because there are areas in your body that are being squeezed and blocked. Lymph can't flow. Circulation isn't getting through. Light is not traveling through your body, and you become unconscious of where in your body you're holding. And you've heard the expression, I left my body. And that can be something people are walking around doing. They are focused outward on what's going on and the stimuli in the world, and they are not tuned in to where they are hurting and holding. If we can get you tuned into your body, if we can loosen that straitjacket inside you, take the pressure off, things start to flow again, healing begins to occur. And I'll give you a specific diagnosis as an example. Degenerative disc disease, known as DDD. And you should play organ music in the background for that one. Dun, dun, dun. The minute you're told you have that, it does something to your mind. And you think, oh dear, I better not twist. I better not bend. And you begin to think that it's something that's inevitable and it's going to progress because of the word degenerative. Doctors cannot agree that that is true. They don't necessarily know that it's degenerative, and they argue with each other about whether it's a disease, simply by virtue of the fact that the cause of it cannot often be found, and the resolution of it can't be explained. They will do all kinds of procedures to try and help someone with that problem, and it just keeps progressing and never gets better. Or they do nothing at all to help that person, and it resolves on its own, or combinations of those two. And they can't figure out exactly why it started, why it stopped, or why it's not stopping. Unless you think of it in terms of pressure. A person may have been going through a stressful time in their life, and their fascial system was in complete fight or flight mode, and everything was being pulled together. And then that may have resolved, and they found meditation, or they started moving again, and the pressure was alleviated. And I don't know if it helps at this point for me to explain the physiology, where fascia is in your body, to be able to paint a picture for those who are listening of how this container wraps around everything.
I know that I think from the top down, I know that it starts with, if I'm remembering from my biology from high school, it goes the dermis and the epidermis. Those are the two main layers of the skin, right?
Yes.
But I'm not sure what follows below that.
Okay. But we are like baklava. We really are.
Crispy and crunchy and very tasty.
And underneath the skin, there's a superficial layer of fascia, exactly like the white stuff on an orange without its skin.
Okay.
I wouldn't say exactly, but the same idea.
Gives the metaphor, yeah.
Yeah, as the metaphor that it holds everything together. And beneath that, it's like being able to take a section out of an orange, and the section in the orange has its own container, just like every muscle and organ inside us is surrounded by its own saran wrap layer of fascia, which is also connected to the superficial layer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can open up a section of orange and see that each little individual piece of pulp has its own container as well. And we're like that all the way down to muscle spindle and organelle, all the way down to bone. And bone is just mineralized fascia. And it's all connected to each other, which explains why I may traction your heel and your nose might get itchy. And it's not your imagination. It's not coincidence. It's information for us about where this line of fascia is connected in your body, and it's being pulled like a drag in a sweater. And it can explain that feeling that you get as you get older, that you've got this really tight sweater inside that's dragging on you, like you're pulling three bodies instead of just your own.
So there are multiple layers, if you will, of this fascia throughout the body, between organs and muscles and nerves and tendons and all of that, right? It's not just right beneath the skin.
Correct. It is, and that's the layer that I, as a myofascial release therapist, address. I'm contacting your superficial layer, and I'm shifting it around, and I'm accessing all the way to bone, because it's all connected. And this can kind of explain why we do no lotion, no oil, because we don't want to slip around on the surface of the skin like the traditional fluff and fold massage that no doubt feels good because it creates sensation. But therapeutically, we are wanting to get traction on the skin and pull or compress for 3 to 5 minutes at a time, waiting for the change in your tissues. As it's pulled in a different direction, it's emitting little electrical responses called the piezoelectric effect, and the fluid under your hands is beginning to warm and become less viscous, and you're getting more glide in the body. And oftentimes, whatever I start, the client often finishes. Meaning, the way that dogs and cats stretch when they get up from a nap.
Oh my God, yes.
Is a beautiful display of self-myofascial release. And if we can elicit that response in your body and keep you safe on the table so you don't fall off, you may follow so many lines, so many tectonic plates in your body that have been wanting to shift. And it creates a really profound experience that causes people, one of my famous, most favorite quotes from a client was, "This is the thing I've never known I always wanted." Because you're freeing up this cocktail of chemistry that's been trapped in you, the lactic acid, uric acid, and adrenaline that gets trapped against the surface of the muscle when you get scared.
Mm.
And it's flowing into your bloodstream. And that's why you can re-experience anger or sadness or, you know, the result of that kind of chemistry while you're on the table. But it triggers the parasympathetic response, and it releases endorphin and dopamine and oxytocin.
So then the rack actually does have medicinal purposes.
And we do a move with one therapist on each end called the rack.
I was thinking the one they did in the medieval times.
In medieval times, yes.
Crank you out. Make you taller. Make you taller. Now, that's very interesting. Now, I will say, I agree with you on that technique. I love watching my dogs stretch. And our big black King Shepherd, Angus, He does it a lot throughout the day. He does it a lot, especially the hind legs. He stretches out those hind legs and pushes forward. And now, there is one danger that I have found to doing that. If I don't do it correctly, and especially when I'm stretching my legs, like I'm laying there in bed and it's morning and it's time to get up and I put my hands over my head and I just push and then I push my legs out. If I'm not careful, I will induce a cramp in my calf.
Cramp.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have to be in touch with your body, physical, you know, really do. You need to be feeling as you're stretching so that you don't end up tightening up something else, you know. And of course, I know that the cramps are usually due to a lack of a certain chemical in the system, and you need to get that in there. I don't know if it's potassium or what have you. But that's an issue too, because it's counterproductive to get a cramp when you're stretching, and it can't happen.
Yeah, two things about that. I would encourage people to slow it way down, go really slow, as you said, and be very present in your body. And then, if that happens while you're on the table, I'm right there.
Right, right.
We have ways of dealing with these.
Oh, yes. Hammers and... and saws and things and wrenches. I find this fascinating because, again, it goes back to the issue of taking care of oneself. And yes, there is a certain amount, as you've just described, there is a certain amount of self MFR.
Yes.
But to come to you, for example, Ronell, would be to allow someone to facilitate your own personal process of self-healing. And I mean, even if it's just the stretching, because I know you do, obviously you do more than just, you know, stretch people out on quote unquote the rack.
Yes.
There's certainly more to it than that, but it can't hurt. I mean, I used to go to a chiropractor on a regular basis, and I remember thinking about it from this standpoint. And I think that what you're dealing with goes even deeper. But I used to describe it to people that because I'm a big proponent of chiropractic and massage and acupuncture and so forth. And I say, well, it's kind of like your skeletal system is held together by a bunch of rubber bands. But then when you do something that misaligns the rubber bands, it then pulls the skeletal structure in a way that then the chiropractor comes along and says, okay, we need to push the structure, skeletal structure back and allow the rubber bands to realign into proper position. And it's going to take a little time, but that's what we're going to do. But and it sounds to me like you're talking about almost the same thing, but on a broader and yet more specific scale.
Yeah, this is that mechanism. Our previous view of the body as separate parts, it just doesn't work anymore because if you did the physics of it all, it doesn't play out. You know, the abdominal pressure that would be generated from doing a deadlift with lifting weights physiologically should explode a human being.
Oh, yeah.
But it gets explained by a word called tensegrity, which means the ability of all of your tissues to work together to create a three-dimensional functioning spongy cushion inside you, and the way that one muscle engages and the other disengages for you to have such fluidity of movement is better explained and understood if you have this understanding of this internal sweater. When people are on the table and I'm facilitating, it's so much better if their body comes to the movement organically. And that's to go back to saying that if you're on the intellectual channel and you try to stretch yourself and say, okay, I'm going to repetitively do this stretch 10 times in a row and hold it 30 seconds each time, it is not coming from a signal inside your body. It's being imposed by your brain as though your body is a slave that has misbehaved and needs to be punished.
Mm.
And it's so much more nurturing if you just turn your thinking mind off and allow your body to feel like a worm and to follow its own organic movement, because it's so much more than just stretching. It is freeing up your body. It is alleviating pressure. It is clearing out old chemistry, and it's getting into the channel of actual healing rather than some intellectually imposed idea that you have. And in this town where I live, there are a lot of yoga people, and there's this concept that they're talking about called spiritual bypassing, where you want to namaste everybody and say bless you on your journey, even when you're mad at them, with this false belief that you could meditate enough so that one day you would never get upset, and you want to appear as though you've arrived and that you are so evolved that you're not upset. But the truth of the matter is we are an animal, and there is a sympathetic nervous system that is programmed to startle. And it happens beyond your conscious control. Rather than ignore it or pretend that it doesn't exist, I say embrace the fact that 10 times a day you get scared and your body clenches. Somebody pulls out in front of you while you're driving. You will react. And work with that to find what I call a SNIT fitness program, where you can excuse yourself from public scrutiny, go into your room, and have a little fist-pounding, kicking, screaming into a pillow biological release of that freeze response that stopped you from reacting from the time when you told your body, not now. There needs to be a, okay, now. And it has nothing to do with whether you're mature or not.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with understanding how your body works and what it needs to be able to remain fluid and have that movement that we need to sustain flow.
You know, a lot of people might say, well, yeah, but that you know, we can't just put those kinds of things off. And I have to tell you that as you're sharing this, the thought goes to, yeah, well, you know, throughout your life, you've put off a lot of stuff. You've put off, especially the one of the most important things, is you've put off following your life's purpose.
Yeah.
And so you can put this off until you get into that, into your closet, into your quiet space, what have you, and release that thing. And therein lies a huge, huge thing, and that is the whole aspect of releasing a lot of this stuff. It's not just through the myofascia release process, but internally and emotionally and energetically releasing this stuff so that, you know, you don't stay clenched up. I mean, I actually observe people who I see on a regular basis, and I may not actually know them. I see them walking from day to day, and they happen to be in the same area. And I watch how they walk. I watch their posture, especially those people who are even ever so slightly, the head is tilted forward. And they're not using a texting device, okay? And I think, what kind of weight have they placed on their head, neck, and shoulders throughout their lives that maybe if they were to let that go, even today, maybe they might straighten up again. I'm sorry?
It's never too late.
Yeah.
I have clients in their 90s.
Mm. I saw a gentleman walking the streets once who, I kid you not, he was bent over to the point where he couldn't straighten up and was always looking down and had to struggle to raise his head enough to see forward, or I guess his eyes were turned so far up that he could see where he was going, but that's how he walked, in a permanent question mark, if you will.
Did you know that if the fascial patterns are not interrupted, they begin to ossify and turn to bone?
Oh my gosh.
That's why he couldn't stand up anymore.
Wow.
And it's no joke. You don't just get to say, oh, that's nice, Ranelle. It's really interesting what you said, and go on and ignore it.
Right, right. Oh, it's just the way you said that is all.
is ignoring it means that it continues to progress. A really good example are hammer toes. Mm. If you have toes that are so bent and never will lay down again because they've turned to bone, that is a perfect example of fascia that has ossified and turned to bone.
Well, I can tell you that when it comes to walking, and whenever I would not be able to because of the pain in my feet, because of gout or what have you, or my ankles, or the tendons in my legs up to my knees to where I had difficulty walking, and I literally had to use a cane just to get from the car into the station, and how much I missed being able to get out and walk just to go get my favorite chai latte. Hot chai latte over at the Starbucks or wherever it was, which is only two blocks away. And yet I knew it was going to take me 15 or 20 minutes to walk that distance, even with the cane. But I would do it. There were times when I would just say, forget it. I'm going to do this. I've got to get out. I've got to walk. No matter how painful it is and how bizarre I must be, I must look walking, I just got to do it. And I cannot fathom not being able to do that. And I'm with you. I don't want, I don't want a scooter. No, no, thank you. I want to be able to be upright and moving around until my final day when they peel my cold dead carcass off the console at the radio station. It'll be a little perplexing for some, I understand, but that's just the way I'm going to go. So let me, before we let you go, let me remind our listeners that they can pick up a copy of Touching Light, How to Free Your Fiber Optic Fascia. Ronelle Wood is my guest. She's the author of this wonderful little book. And I also compliment you and or your publicist on the font size. It's very easy to read. Thank you so much for that. Tell me how people can get in touch with you, your website.
They can buy the book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And our website is omsanctuary.com, omsanctuary.com. And when I first started the business, I called it Ojai Healing Movement. That's where the O-H-M comes from. And we have progressed into other areas. We do myofascial release. I also lead self-myofascial release workshops, and I train other therapists how to do myofascial release when they become interested in finding a method of treating people that has longer-term healing results.
Well, I applaud you for the work that you're doing. It's in an area that is not that well-known. And I know people are learning more about it. I have heard of myofascia, the term, and not so much the release part, but nonetheless, it's something I think that we all need to be looking into. Before I let you go, and you aren't that far away, so the next time we decide to do this, I would love to have you in studio to continue our conversation about this.
I'm there.
Who knows, maybe we'll even take the microphone and we'll sit out in a couple of beach chairs on the beach and have that chat by as the ocean rolls in and out.
Oh, I love that idea.
I've not done that before, but hey, anything is possible. I have three final questions for you before we wrap up, and again, I thank you so much for sharing so much time with us here on the program.
Yes.
First question is, who is Ronelle Wood?
I am real. I was not raised to be this. I grew up in a very fundamentalist Christian home, and I was supposed to be quite repressed and suppressed, and a wife, and not too ambitious and quiet. But my spirit just wouldn't stay in the box. And in the process of trying to be that person, it hurt a lot physically. And as I went in search of what works for my body and learning how to do massage and then injuring myself doing it by working in a massage mill, I had to do further research until I got to this point. So there have been times in my life where I could have thought, oh, this is terrible. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. But all of it I'm grateful for because it's led me here, and I followed my heart at every point. In spite of the fact that I had a big master's of science in speech pathology, and that seemed like it was the practical direction to go to get a mortgage someday, I just had to do what felt right for me, and I couldn't be more pleased with where I live, who I love, and what I do for a living.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
To empower individuals to know that they have a lot more to say about their health than they might have been led to believe. To know that this system, if they simply have a cognitive awareness of the fascial system in their body, it will give them even more power to know how to deal with it through twisting, stretching, receiving myofascial release, doing self-myofascial release, and talking to others about it and requesting it from their doctor.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To shine. Light is everything. It is the thing that carries information, that makes us healthy, that dispels the shadows. And when I was a kid and they taught us the song, This Little Light of Mine, it's still in my brain. And I remember all the times I've tried to hide it under a bushel. Just doesn't work. And I hope that my coming out of my shell and my willingness to be myself and blab about what I'm passionate about makes it possible for other people to shine as well, whether it's in some artistic way, whether it's in a physical way, whether it's in a thinking way, I don't care. I want to allow my light to shine and have it give everybody else permission to glow.
Because we have the time, I wanted to ask you one final question, and you sort of alluded to it a little bit. What role does your intuition play, that still small voice play, in the work that you're doing?
I have found that if a person is gifted with something, they often consider it a no-brainer, and they think of it as something that anybody could do. And that's how I came to realize that I'm gifted with intuition, because I just assumed everybody else could feel what I felt and that it was known information, until it became really clear that people were flocking to me specifically for myofascial release when they had other options, because there was an ability within me to intuit what was going on with people. I can attribute some of the trauma in my life to my ability to allow for someone else to express and not be put off when somebody had a big emotional release. And the people who work with me describe me as a very mothering energy, and we're all different. All therapists are different. But those who are really good at myofascial release usually have a very strong intuitive power, so that when I put my hands on someone, it feels like somebody has given me a tube of toothpaste with different shapes inside, and it's my job to figure out what the shapes are and see if I can smooth them out. And that's very easy for me. And sometimes the words that I use make it more possible for somebody to let go. And that's why Gay Hendricks told me the way you talk it needs to be written, because it's the way you say it that helps people understand and really gives the body permission to let go. And that comes from my intuition, and I admit I'm gifted in that area.
Give us one more time the email address, the website address.
Om Sanctuary, O-H-M as in mom, sanctuary.com. Now, oh, and my email, Ronelle,
yes.
R-O-N-E-L-L-E, at omsanctuary.com, just to make it easy.
Omsanctuary.com is the website. We encourage you to check that out. Also, check out the book, Touching Light, How to Free Your Fiber Optic Fascia. And Ronelle Wood, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.